Blog Talk Radio.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to yet another edition of the Grindhouse, folks. This is the double feature show. All for you. The call-in number is 646-915-9620 again, or again, 646-915-9620, discussing all things sci-fi, pulp, pop, you name it, we got it. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove, and when we come back, your own podcast enterprise crew will unpack the latest in pulp news. Should be a pretty festive event. This is the underdog theme. Keeping it somewhat lighthearted, folks. The underdog theme by the Butthole Surfers. What a name. We'll be right back. Let's groove. Enough of that. Again, the Butthole Surfers performing the underdog theme Redux. Folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio. This is the Comic Shop first. Then batting second is Afternoon Radio featuring Captain Kirk. As I said earlier, the call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. And of course, I could not do this without any sort of real passion or fire or efficacy without my podcast enterprise crew. First up, we have the captain. Captain, let's get to it.
Butthole Surface. Interesting name.
And then, of course, we have the indefatigable, irascible, irreplaceable. What's the euphemism for the Hulk? The incredible Daryl B. Parents out there, if you give your kids full access to technology before they're teenagers, don't be shocked when the wrong things happen. That's my public service announcement.
You're being cryptic there, Daryl. What happened?
Well, a 9-year-old hung herself.
Oh, my
Why?
God.
Because they found that she was getting all sorts of hate mail and spam and stuff over her iPhone, which was fully unlocked. It was fully jailbroken. This was in, I believe, Boston or Philadelphia, one of those places. I read the story and I got mad. I'm like, it's a 9-year-old kid. How has a 9-year-old kid got more internet access than I do?
Yeah.
That's kind of dumb.
Yeah, well, they're being raised in this environment. You know, we were adults when this, you know, we acquired into this environment. They are raised in it. Incredible.
So like I said, parents, don't get outraged. You're dumb enough to give your child who hasn't formed an opinion about the world yet, full access to the world, all right, without any supervision. I feel sorry for the kid because it opened up that kid to all sorts of things they're not ready for yet. Parents out there, let your kids be kids. Now let's have some fun.
All right. Wow. My condolences and prayers. All right. Again, folks, this is the Comic Shop, all things pulp, comic book, sci-fi, fantasy, you name it. A lot of things to get into this time. I guess the obvious thing, well, first up, I finally got around to seeing this Thor the Dark World trailer. Finally made it to the internet, finally got a chance to check it out. I liked the first Thor, wasn't sure if it had enough legs really to do an adequate second film. Obviously, I'm mistaken. Daryl, give us your knowledge, your thoughts, your impressions on this trailer. What do you think about it?
Well, if you watched Earth's The Mightiest Avengers, the Avengers cartoon, then you know the protagonist in this Thor movie already, the Dark Elf, Malekith. All right? That's the protagonist in this one. It's living up to its name. And if you notice, with each one of these follow-ups that are coming, all of them are taking a darker bent, right? Because you got Thor the Dark World. If you've seen the Iron Man 3 trailer, right, or any one of the three trailers that have come out, each of them have been dark. All right. Yes, there's joking, but each of them have been dark. And hell, the whole premise of Captain America: The Winter Soldier is going to be, you know, the darkening of Captain America's partner. And can he redeem him, or will he have to kill him? So each one of these sequels has taken a darker tone than other Marvel films. Or other Marvel films in this series. As far as the Dark World goes, you know what? It fits what I'm thinking because Malekith ain't someone to play with. That he's controlling dark magic. He has a pure hate for all things Asgardian, you know. And the symbol of Asgard to that point is Thor. He's the shining sun. So I hope him and the Warriors 3 are ready because Malekith is going to give it to them with both barrels. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
You know, well, something else I thought about this, Jazz, you were speaking, that, you know, we know about this paradigm that Marvel is promoting. You know, the first wave of films were referred to or are being referred to as Phase 1. Now we're in the midst of Phase 2 coming up next week with Iron Man 3. Are we to assume that there's going to be that same interconnectedness with the films? Like, in other words, are we to assume that after the end, the end credits for Iron Man 3, there's going to be some reference to Avengers 2 or to Thor, that it's going to be connective tissue for these rounds of sequels. Are we going to expect that this time?
Well, think about it. There's going to be connective tissue leading out, because remember the premise of what Iron Man 3 is going to be. After the invasion of New York, after Iron Man nearly dies there, he sort of becomes a recluse, sort of a downward spiral as a hero, which leads to the speculation about the demon in the bottle angle running through this as he's getting ready to face the Mandarin. You know, that leads to that. That's been the tease for that one. With Thor,
I know you hate to do this. I know you can, but can you do me a favor? Explain the demon of the bottle reference to our audience who may not be familiar with.
Yeah, all right. Demon of the bottle is simple. Demon of the bottle was a storyline about Tony Stark trying to be a hero while fighting alcoholism. All right? And if you've watched any of the first two Iron Man movies or the Avengers movie, you should know every time Tony Stark has been in the scene, there's been alcohol near him. So they have subtly played this up, all right? Now, all Iron Man fans were ready for this. All Iron Man fans are ready for this. The question is, we don't know if the casual fan will be ready to see how low this could go. Because in the comic, he goes to some very, very, in the graphic novel, I should say, at least, he goes to some very, very dark places while fighting alcoholism. All the while, he's taking on the Mandarin. All the while, he's taking on Ezekiel Stain. All the while, he's doing that. Now, throw that in with elements from Extremis, which had to do with his new techno-organic armor, and the Revenge of the Mandarin, which is self-explanatory. You throw that all together, how is Tony Stark expected to breathe? That's the simple thing. But that goes in line with what I'm saying. All of this phase of the Marvel movies, expect not much of the lighthearted. You are going to deal with some very serious topics coming up, and you're dealing with very serious topics. And you have the main man of death looming for the second Avengers movie right around the corner. So this is brilliantly set up. Now the question is, can Marvel pay it off? And then you throw in, on top of all of that, the news this week that, there may be a brother and sister team that may be making an appearance in Avengers. And Avengers movie folks and fans have gone nuts all week. But back to the topic at hand, the Thor trailer was pretty good at whetting the senses. The question is, and it's the same question I have for all of these movies, you've given us the trailer, good. I've seen a lot of trailers trying to pay it off. We'll see in November if they could pay it off. Back to you, Afternerd.
All right, let's go to the captain. Captain, give us your first impressions of this trailer, and also something that we didn't discuss that's, because, we're kind of going back and forth with Iron Man 3. That's coming out next week. Thor's coming out in November. You told me something I was unaware of with this whole depowered ring business with the Mandarin. What's going on with that? Daryl, you can jump in after he speaks. I'm a little disappointed if that's true. Your thoughts about the trailer first.
Okay. I think I agree totally with Daryl. It is very good as a quote-unquote teaser to whet the senses, because normally when you see these early trailers, they're not good. They're not good. And they're normally designed that way for you to be like, and then they pick it up and give you something a little bit better, and then it gets really good. That's what they normally do here. So if this is any indication that this is your, as I'm going to use this, this is an Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk term, this is your lower tier trailer, and it's going to pick up and go mid-tier, then it goes to the stratosphere. That's incredible. But you never know. This might be your lower tier trailer, and then there really isn't anything behind it. Just as Daryl B said, it's time to show and prove. Now here's something else. Not to go off on a tangent, but it's tangentially related. You have to understand something with the cinema now. They're exploring, not just in the superhero movies, or the anti-hero, if you want to use that term, the darker aspect, but in these other movies like Snow White and the Huntsman, they've figured out that at this given time, this is what the people want to see. They don't want to see so much the goody-goody thing that much. Maybe it'll switch a little bit later. But right at this given time, that's what they've figured out, the suits. And it is working because that is what we want to see. We don't want to see the lighthearted. We want to see the dark-hearted, the darkness. That's what we want to see. Now, back to the over to the Iron Man. It seems like Mandarin is supposed to just be a terrorist in this movie, that his rings are depowered, which really doesn't make any sense. That really doesn't make any sense, you know? But that's what seems like the route that they're going with in this situation. He doesn't have all of those powers that he's supposed to have with those rings. That's what came to light via some internet articles from, I would say, reliable sources. Time will tell. But that's what was brought to my attention. Over to you, Daryl B., to expand upon that.
Well, you know why they did it? Because they want Iron Man, what's the best word? They want Iron Man grounded in reality. And if we bring up alien rings to the Iron Man audience, they'd be like, alien rings? Alien rings? We're going to alien rings in Iron Man? What the hell? And meanwhile, the Iron Man fans will be like, cool, I wonder if he's got all the set, all the power rings. Oh my God, like, unless it could be two things. One, they don't think the audience would accept it. Or two, they'll think, if power rings, that's too close to Green Lantern. We don't want anybody thinking that we're Green Lantern. No, no, no. In which case, oh my God, Marvel will have cheapened the way out here. Or even tangentially, if they take it out, I'm going to go on a tangent too, they might consider that the power rings are too close to the Infinity Gems. And if you're going to use Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet in Avengers 3, you don't want anything approximating that in like powers, you know, like that. So it might be that Marvel doesn't want him to come over looking like a generic villain using different power sets that they A, intend to use later, or B, oh, we're just making fun of the other company. Even though for Avengers 2, it would totally kick butt if we had the Squadron Sinister there, you know, with Serpent Thanos to just stick it to DC. But I've brought that theory up before. But, Topman, honestly, that's what I think. When I read about it, I'm like, they're either afraid of the Green Lantern comparison, or this is a definite sign that we're getting the Infinity Gauntlet in Avengers 2. Back to you, Alfred.
Yeah, but what kind of threat does the Mandarin pose? Because you do see him wearing rings, so that what, they're just for show?
That's true.
What?
They're just for show?
What, the rings? Remember, the rings control different aspects of energy powers, the Mandarin's rings, right? There's 10 rings in all. 10 rings, each one controls a different facet of power, you know? And by comparison, the Infinity Gauntlet, you know, the Infinity Gems on it, they had 6 different aspects of energy, power, and reality that those control. You know what it is. When it comes to cinema, they look at the powers and they go, we can't have both of these guys. They're too alike in power. We can't do both of this. We can't do both of that. Because if you read the description of the Mandarin's rings, and then you read the Infinity Gems, they both have similar, they draw upon both like similar power sources, or both described to do similar things. My thing is, you take away the Infinity Gems, you take away the Mandarin's rings, that was where he matched Tony Stark power-wise, because he really never wore technological armor. It was the alien rings, and it was his intellect that allowed him to battle Tony Stark. He was the one villain against Tony Stark who could think on the fly and match him intellectually in the boardroom as well as with the rings on the field of battle. So, I don't know about taking the power rings away from him. Back to you, Afroner.
Yeah, I mean, well, we'll see how it turns out. I mean, I'm a little disappointed because that's three-quarters of the reason why you would want to see the Mandarin on screen. I mean, that's part of his power set dating back since the character's inception. And they could have they're used to changing things around. Instead of alien, it could have been just some, I don't know. So even if it was alien, you could have said it could have been an ancient artifact that he found. I mean, that's not they're always finding ancient artifacts in cinematic lore. Why is it different now? I mean, didn't he find the rings as some kind of artifact anyway?
Yeah, and
plus we saw Thanos in Avengers 2. I mean, that whole grounded in reality thing has already been dispelled by virtue of the Avengers to begin with.
Well, that is true, but you could also here's the way to get around it. You could have Thanos contact Mandarin to have him be one of his agents on Earth. You know, he saw the Skrull invasion wasn't going to work, and he presents Mandarin with the rings. And when in the midst of battle, the rings fail him. And for the cutscene at the end, you have the beaten Mandarin looking at Thanos like, "You promised me this would work. I was supposed to be your loyal agent." And he goes like, "I chose not to extend my power to you. All right, I've gotten a measure of this human Tony Stark, and I found him wanting. And the fact you had so much trouble and got defeated by him proves to me that you're found wanting too. I'll take care of things myself." Cut scene, you're ready for Avengers 2 now. But
well,
it's Hollywood. Do we get groundwork laid like that? We never know, but Marvel's done it better than DC has, so who knows?
All right, we'll leave it at that. Let's go to a quick groove, gentlemen. We're going to go to a quick nerdcore groove. When we get back, I want to talk about this Mr. Felix out of the Bronx. I don't know if you're aware of this, Captain or Daryl.
I'm aware.
This made the news piece. It's like number page 3 in the Daily News. It's funny how comic book oriented news or topics are no longer page 15. They're like page 2. You know what I mean? Page 3. So you have a gentleman out of the Bronx, Mr. Felix, who has his own online comic book project, and he's using the term superhero. He has it trademarked, but you can't use superhero as a term because Marvel and DC own it. The term superhero. So we'll unpack it. We'll talk about it. This is David versus Goliath, almost verbatim. All right. As I said, quick groove. This is Slept on Tony, MF Doom, and Ghostface. We'll be right back. Speaking of Iron Man, right back.
Force me to do evil. I created an iron suit to protect my people. Escape, vow to be Iron Man the Great. The billionaire Tony Stark to renew your faith. Build Stark Towers, throw the biggest events. Got liquid armor, I can paint off this. Keep a few bad chicks, I ain't the average hero. Movie premieres, hit me with this alien. Zero 6'6 and letting go. Playboy industrialist, face of a ghost. Minds of a technologist, specialist. Modern day speed slang therapist. Specializing weapons, I can blow on terrorists. So don't sleep, big homie. Real recognize and I can see you, phony. My weak heart can't take it. Got a lifelong sentence. Boy, genius grown up, and I fight with a vengeance. When I glide on stage, and my heart gently weeps in the iron rib cage. Punched by metals, replaced by elements. My enemies hunted like a tusk on an elephant. Extraordinary, how did my dual identities? Anthony Stark, call me Tony, the top pedigree. Multi-billionaire, military contractor. Crushing my opponents with the strength of a compactor. X Factor, I turn liquids to metals. Water to wine, I turn dirt into rose petals. Greatest man walking, blow a bottle of goose. Both from Clan see suits, I'm so elegant. Scientifically intelligent, my lawyers won the case, I won't take the settlement. Money's irrelevant, I need heat to energize. We're taking over the planet, Stark Enterprise.
Mighty MF Doom, Slept on Tony, Ghostface Killer. Folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio with the Comic Shop first, Afternoon Radio second. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Let me welcome, of course, our stalwart listenership, Sergio Mims, and, of course, Kavina Man. I want to talk about this David and Goliath story. It was in yesterday's or this morning's Daily News. And it's focusing on a gentleman out of the Bronx, local gentleman, Ray Felix. And I'm fairly confident I can get in touch with him and get him on the show. I'm pretty sure he wants to share his tale. He has an online book, comic book, called A World Without Superheroes, and it's trademarked. Now, the issue here is actually, and looking at is a picture of him holding his book. Artwork alone, it looks interesting. And that's another thing, too. You know, you're dealing with exposure, and you have guys that have talent, but it's very hard to be a self-published dude or dudette in trying to compete with the bigwigs, trying to compete with the big boys, which would, of course, be Marvel and DC. And actually, I was kind of shocked. Not really shocked, but a little disappointed with even the amount of comics that are sold by DC and Marvel. It really is an industry that's on the decline somewhat as far as comic book publishing, because it said that DC and Marvel respectively have sold more than 2 million comics for the year 2011. If anyone knows, and I know Daryl does, the history of comic books, one book in 1940 sold 2 million issues. One book, not all these books for the year. That right there is a little troubling. So we are sincerely, the youth are sincerely not reading comic books. We are talking about people probably over the age of 20 reading comics. Anyway, because Mr. Felix's online comic is entitled A World Without Superheroes, because he's using the term superheroes, he's having difficulty because it is a trademark term. Superhero is a trademark. And only DC and Marvel are allowed to use it. I mean, it's fairly ingenious that anytime someone thinks of superhero, you undoubtedly must think of a Marvel or DC imprint. His contention is the term superhero predates Marvel and DC. He says that the term superhero can be found in the dictionary dating back to 1917. This is little guy versus big guy. This is David versus Goliath. Captain, what are your thoughts on this gentleman? Looks like it might be a difficult thing. I think his argument has some validity, but again, you're fighting these multinational corporations. I don't know.
Well, I always like for the small individual to win in a situation like this, if you can. His argument does have some validity, but I don't think he's going to win. I think they're just going to drag it out, and you don't have the money to fight, and then that's it. Cease and desist, and it'll be over. That's it. That's it. You know, he doesn't have the money to fight Marvel in DC. He doesn't have the money. But I think his argument is definitely valid. It's definitely valid. And he also talks about something in here that both of them own the trademark. And based on from what he's saying, the trademark law, it has to come from one source. It cannot come from two sources. And I guess he's trying to rally behind that. And that's what has held up his argument a bit longer. Well, you know, time will tell. You know, essentially time will tell in this situation, and we'll see how it plays out. But I'm rooting for him, even though I don't think he's going to win. My emotions ride out with him.
Well, I tell you, I think the deal with Marvel and DC both having the term superheroes, that these guys, we know them to have such, I mean, this is like fandom lore, that Marvel and DC can barely agree about anything. But they did agree. They came together on this issue. They came together years ago and said, hey, you and I are going to share this terminology. So this is something that happened because they agreed to do it. That's why they shared the term superhero. But I didn't know that the term superhero, I mean, listen, superhero is such a ubiquitous term. I mean, it's just, I don't know how you can own a term. It's like owning the word the. You can't own the word the. But, I, you know, listen, I would hate to think that because the word is so ubiquitous, it's so out there. But they have a handle on it. Superheroes, it seems to be a difficult word to trademark, but they've been doing it for years. So I don't know. I would like to see, because I've noticed that other companies, they have to use another euphemism, and it's not superhero. It has to be, you know, powers or something. It's very rarely do you see anyone else actually use the term superhero. You know, no other company can do that, only Marvel and DC. And that's a little overkill to me. It's a little overkill. Darryl, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on this young man's plight and the whole superhero ownership thing? I mean, down to the term superhero. Your thoughts?
It's not the first time I've heard about this. There was a case like 6-7 years ago where an indie company wanted to use superhero for a line of novels, and it got shot down like this. I wish Mr. Felix plenty of luck in this. This is dumb. This is stupid. Why? Because as far as I know, they didn't coin the term superhero. This isn't the NFL. The NFL came up with the name Super Bowl. And so once they came up with Super Bowl, they trademarked it right away and bap. So they came up with that. That's cool. As far as I know, superhero comics, I see the term superhero everywhere. Everywhere. But I don't see Marvel and DC chasing everybody that uses it. You know, I see superheroes mentioned in places like Image and Dark Horse, and I don't see them going, oh, you're using our word. You can't use our word. That's where this debate gets to be a little stupid, all right? And honestly, for fighting and challenging, they gave Felix a bigger platform to tell his tale than if they just went, okay, let him run his little indie book like that. It's not a major competitor to you. This just, like the captain said, this smacks of the 900-pound bully picking on the 98-pound weakling here, you know? But, you know, hey, this is where Mr. Felix gets his revenge, because now it's brought out to the light, all right? Maybe not in mainstream, but it's brought out to the light in the geek circles and everything. And we all now take a pause and we look at this and we're like, really? Really? And now we're all looking at our law books. We're all looking at previous incidents. We're all looking. And if there is one group of people you never want to research into history, it's the geek side. It's the fantasy side. It's the, because we have our multifaceted fan base that from all walks of life. And all it takes is one lawyer, like Adam Warlock, all right, one legal expert like Kurt Busiek, one, you know, someone like that in our indie circles to go and contact Mr. Felix and go, sir, I support you, and you can use this rule right here. Throw this up against him. It'll tie the big two up. You know, that's all it would take. You know, by fighting him on this, on his little indie book, you've given him about 300 to 400 times more exposure than if you just let him go. But it's a catch-22, like Captain Kirk may suggest. If you let him go, then what's to stop this bigger company from doing? And what's to stop this bigger company from doing? And what's to stop this bigger company? So it's a catch-22 for Marvel and DC. They're screwed. They put themselves, they backed themselves into a corner where they have to fight it just because they were stupid enough to trademark it in the first place. Back to you, Afternoon.
All right. Let's move things along a little bit. I guess, you know, I will try my best to get Mr. Felix on the program so he can really explain his case to us. But I'm a little disturbed by the fact that this word does predate Marvel and DC trademarking it. That's like if I want to use the word mythology. Mythology's been around for hundreds of years. How would I all of a sudden say, oh, well, I think I'll trademark that? Most words that I know are trademark are words that are invented on the spot. You know, if you invent some goofy, you know, whatever. Some word that hasn't been invented. That's what I'm thinking. But whatever.
But you know, Afro Nerd, it's forums like this that give a discussion to it. Just like I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, before the Siegel and Schuster decision came down about the Superboy trademark that went against them, Kurt Busiek went on his own page and went, you know, Superman has been a subject of different tales for the last 75, 80 years, or a version of Superman. I fail to see how his thing isn't public domain yet like other heroes. And that sparked the debate on Facebook in different comic shops. That sparked the debate. This, if it gets any more of a higher platform, people will debate about this everywhere. Like, hey, D, you're a comic book head. What do you think about this? You know, and you'll have to think about it, and you'll have to talk about it. This is where DC and Marvel, hence why, folks, you heard Captain Kirk laughing about this. DC and Marvel painted themselves into a corner. Back to you, Afronerd.
Roland
Listen,
versus Wade.
The great Wu-Tang Clan already figured this out. Cash rules everything around me. Because we saw that Disney paid Marvel $5 billion for intellectual property. I sincerely doubt they're going to pay $5 billion for properties that can someone could just argue, oh, they should belong to everybody. I don't know about that. Somebody, then you're going to see JFK-like assassinations. No. This will be decided, trust me. Now, again, as I referenced our friend and also our Afro Radio's resident film critic, resident cineast, Sergio Mims is in the house, and he brought to my attention, I didn't even know about this, Omar Sy, Frenchman, latest film, The Untouchables, he has been given the nod for portraying Bishop on screen for the next iteration of the X-Men. I don't know. I spoke to our friend Daryl, Donna from Superhero Comics. For the listener, definitely check out her spot in Floral Park, Long Island, Floral Park, New York. And she loves The Untouchables. I know of The Untouchables. I know Sergio probably feels the same way. The Untouchables, I just didn't dig that film. That is a French version of a Tyler Perry film. It's another film that's intended. I tried to explain it to her, but some folks dislike what they like. And I felt like the whole concept of the cool black guy teaching the stiff white guy how to be cool, we've seen that for the last 50 years. You know, so that's the part I found somewhat offensive. Anyway, I wish him luck with the Bishop character. I never knew Bishop was French. I knew him to be Aboriginal, which is another question I have, is that he's always been, I thought, portrayed as a black person, although Aboriginals are considered black, but it can be confusing. I want Daryl to unpack this for me. In the 90s animated series, Bishop and his sister clearly looked to be black. And now we have a black Frenchman playing him. but then I hear that he's Australian. What's up?
Are we going into the land of the Australian Wolverine here? Is this where we? This is the road we're traveling here. Okay, let me try to clear this up. All right, if you're going to do a Days of Future Past thing, okay, this should kind of come after Days of Future Past, just for people to know right there. When we're doing this whole storyline, you know, if we're doing the timelines right, Bishop is closer to where Cable is than where Days of Future Past is. But we're going to shoehorn him in, sort of like most of the mutant characters that was in First Class. You know, we're going to shoehorn them into this thing. I love there being a strong black character on screen. But I said the same thing about when we had Darwin in First Class, and we saw how they did him dirty. You saw how they did Angel dirty in First Class. You know? Gotta prove it to me. Gotta prove it to me that you could do a strong black character in the X-Men. I've said it on the show. I continue to say it. X-Men as a property is one of the most racist, prejudiced properties out there today. We find symbolism in it, but until we talk, I'm like Sink on the stoop of his steps with his arms crossed, going, ah, so you're coming to recruit me, huh? So you X-Men are finally coming to the hood, huh? Like there was never any like mutants in the hood. I never saw you around my way, but now you need me, huh? Well, right now, you got Storm, and that's it. You got Storm. And that's it, in terms of the mainstream consciousness, all right? You're going to give me Bishop? All right, let's see you guys pull this off. I mean, you could have done things with Darwin, you killed him off right away. Could have done things with Angel, you made her into a bad guy. Sorry to our black Latina friends out there, you know? You want this character on screen that's going to change his history so it lines up like this? You better do it right. Because if you don't do it right, you know the wrath of one Darryl B will be all upon you like the sword of Damocles. Brian Singh, are you hearing this? Better get this right, brother. Better get this right. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Well, you know, you bring up something very important, Darryl. I really wasn't a fan of hearing Singer getting this project again. I really wasn't. And this is not, you know, a reboot means a reboot into the bones of it. Now we're going back to him. I mean, you know, when you really look back at the X-Men really weren't that great. I mean, maybe one and two were okay, but, you know, you give them credit in the sense that they were the early beginnings of them treating the comic book properties somewhat, you know, reverent, with some kind of reverence. But compared to other things, the movies that came after the X-Men kind of poor. If you really think about it. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Are you pleased with the X-Men? Could the X-Men be better? And maybe that's because Fox is involved. That makes it also sucky. The fact that Fox has part of the Marvel Universe is really what makes it problematic. Fox and Sony suck. I'm saying that just to be – we need, as long as Spider-Man or these other characters, we got to pretend as a comic book audience that they're not related – to everything else that's going on. Spider-Man should have been swinging through New York when Avengers were fighting these aliens, and we didn't see it. And it's because of legalese and Fox and Sony suckiness. Well, no one says it, but that's what it is.
Hey, that's why Captain brought it up 3 months ago. He said keep an eye on Daredevil because those rights were going to lapse. Captain called it. I gave him credit on the latest blog. Go like this past week, the rights reverted right back to Marvel Studios because they couldn't do anything with Daredevil. That's why I was hoping that First Class wasn't going to get made. And people were like, why are you hating? Why are you hating? Because if it came back to Marvel Studios, then Marvel would treat the characters with more reverence. All right? You wouldn't have as many slip-ups as you had in First Class. It was beautifully shot. It was a beautifully shot movie, but the plot holes and getting characters' powers wrong and how they work on screen, that was a little much for me. you know? And with this one, hey, I was all for X-Men Days of Future Past. You're going to do it. But now I'm hearing all of these mutants getting involved. And I'm like, okay, all right, let's see you guys make this work. Because you're going down that same road First Class went down, all right? Prove me you can make this work. And then you throw Bryan Singer into the mix, and let's face it, his last couple of movies have not been blockbusters. Oh, blockbusters. We'll just say have not been good. How's that, Captain? Have not been good when you good. Put a discerning eye to him? So he's got something to prove here. He, you know who he is right now? He's M. Night Shyamalan taking on The Last Airbender, right? Here's a property. People have fallen back in love with it again. You have been struggling for your last couple of movies. Prove to me your sense can make this work. It's a do-or-die thing. And guess what? Hey, Brian, after Superman, yo, people look at you with superheroes and they're not real too eager. Back to you guys.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part is, you know, it is obvious, even on a small level, that when Marvel gets a handle of their own properties, we can get a sigh of relief that there's going to be some semblance of that character the way we need to see it. Case in point, for those who haven't seen this 10-minute short, I'm pretty sure half the world has seen it now, Thomas Jane is the Punisher the right way in a simple 10-minute clip that was probably done for a couple of shekels. Dirty Laundry. Dirty Laundry on YouTube is the Punisher. For whatever reason, they couldn't with millions of dollars, they couldn't do it. But a fan-made film, or I guess Jane himself did it, in 10 minutes, he did the Punisher the way it's supposed to be done. Two or three films later, they couldn't do it with big studios, but it's not Marvel. Now that it's returned back to Marvel, we shall see. But he has the character. Dirty Laundry proves that for done for probably a couple of shekels.
Shekels.
Shekels?
10 minutes. In 10 minutes. Why is it so different? We go through this all the time. Millions of dollars to suck, 10 minutes to get it right for a few shekels.
But you know what they'll say? They'll turn around and say, okay, that movie there for 10 shekels might be better, but who's going to see it? So I have to put the sucky people around it so people could see it. That's how they craft their argument, just to let you know. That's how they craft it.
Well, it's a faulty argument.
It is a faulty argument because suck is as suck does. It sucks. I agree with you.
And on that note, look, quick plug. If you haven't picked up this week's issue of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, do it. All right? This whole argument reminds me of that just because you need to see the issue, A, and B, since we brought up Dirty Laundry. Hey, Marvel, what about getting that kid that did the Miles Morales Spider-Man joint to go in and give toss a few District 9 shekels his way and see if we could get that professionally made? I'd rather see that than see Garfield as Spider-Man again.
Well, you know what?
I would too, believe it or not.
You know, you bring up a good point. Is there going to be an issue, or could there be an issue with Marvel having their Spider-Man be this black Spider-Man, this Afro-Latin Spider-Man? Would that interfere with Sony Spider-Man?
You know it'll be something stupid. Like Sony will be saying, you can't use Spider-Man. We own Spider-Man. And Marvel will be like, excuse me? You own Spider-Man?
No. Better yet, they'll tell you, yeah, nice plan, but there will not be any overseas market due to the complexion of the character.
Nah, it's still Spider-Man. They can't say that
still
because we'll make Will Smith his father.
Oh, dear God.
Check
that's
and mate.
That's a whole different thing.
Then you got a damn near $1 billion movie.
Yeah, that's a whole different other.
Man, make him the father. Make Sally Richardson, Whitfield Richardson, the mom. It'll look like I Am Legend 2, you know. Except we need a black kid that's not Jaden. Yeah. I'm already seeing the cease and desist letters being sent out to us right now.
So, you know what, though? It sounds like a hot movie, though. It sounds like a hot movie. Matter of fact, you may want to have a Latina in there instead of Richardson, the hot Latina of the moment, one of them. Or maybe, actually, who was his co-star in the one where he played the dating expert?
Oh, Eva Mendes?
Have Eva Mendes as the mother. Eva Mendes as the mother, Will Smith as the father. I hate to say Jayden, but Jayden might work. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, it could work. Or maybe actually the kid would have to be a little bit younger. Jayden's already past that. The kid would have to be like 12. But that would be Spider-Man. I don't know why. It's going to be legalese. I'm telling you, there'll be a legal problem with it. And Marvel doing it.
But here it is. We're arguing about this, right? And we'll come up again. But have you guys seen Jamie Foxx's blue look as Electro? I saw it, and I was like, I thought Jamie Foxx was playing Electro, not Mr. Freeze.
the ultimate version of Electro looks that way.
Blue?
Isn't it?
Okay.
He doesn't have the costume. For logistics, for the audience is not going to accept someone with a star bolt on his head.
Well, that is true. But hey, Max Dillon for years was a white guy who just glowed and had the stupid costume. Then in the Ultimate Universe, they made him, okay, he can become living electricity. So you could see him, like, go into TV sets and follow power lines and stuff like this. It doesn't matter. You didn't have to turn his whole skin pigment blue. Now in this, you finally get a black man portraying the role, and, oh, guess what? We're going to turn him into maggot. We're turning him blue.
Well, listen, a couple of things. LeVar Burton had to wear those goggles for, what, 7 years? Who's the gentleman that played Worf on Star Trek?
Michael Dorn.
Yeah, Michael Dorn.
It's true.
It did not change their skin color.
There's going to be a CGI attached to that, though. It's not going to be him just in blue. It's blue for what we can see now, but there's going to be that on top of the CGI on top of that.
All right, but this is me stirring the pot, folks, because I guarantee you guys didn't think about it that way. Because I see a lot of guys who are on TV, you know, using superpowers without any changes to their pigment when they're white. But let a black man be in the role, and now all of a sudden, I got Mr. Freeze 2.0.
Well, listen, man, this goes. We have to open up that line of discussion for another show. But this goes back to the very, very premise of Storm when she was created in the late 70s. They had to make her somewhat Caucasian looking, even though she has black skin. She's got straight white hair in Africa, and her eyes turn white when she's empowered. I mean, that's kind of they have to make you otherworldly black in order to be palatable for white audiences, even as a superhero. You can't look like Superman looks like he's a grocery store clerk. He's still allowed to look that way. Black man, we got to put some weird goggles on him. We got to make him look weird. You got to give him green hair. I don't know. That's been put out there too.
I had to bring it up. I'm thinking it's a case of Brad Paisley, LL Cool J, accidental racist. You know, with this, you know it. But I saw it and I took it as, you know, you're finally getting a black man in a powerful villain role. I mean, they didn't make Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin put on whiteface. They didn't make him have to shave his hair, even though he was bald already. They didn't make him have to put on a giant fat suit to become Kingpin. All right, Electro, you could pull off the Electro thing with him looking normal. You didn't have to mutate him. All right, you didn't have to lose the fact that he's a black man. But as the supervillain, all of a sudden he becomes blue. I took that as it's not intentional. I'm hoping to God it isn't intentional to downplay the racial aspect of it. But I got burned with Richard Pryor in Superman 3 when I wanted him to be Brainiac. All right?
Well,
I got burned, you know, I've been burned several times before where I see a black person getting ready to play a major white role in one of these things. All right?
Well,
I'm just putting it out there now that I'm like, uh-oh.
Well, quickly, we only got about 4 minutes remaining, so I want to just touch on this topic real quick. To getting your opinions on this, Darryl, I'm really digging this third iteration of the new Avengers with Black Panther as the HNIC, and I say that affectionately. But it's almost cinematic in how it's being done. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm like, wait a minute. I don't know if it's intentional, but it seems like it's a movie, and the fact that you have the Black Panther really, really playing that Batman role more or less. Is this going to harken back to an Avengers cameo where he does this kind of stuff, or am I still dreaming? Why are they going in this direction?
Not going to wait. Essentially, what Avengers is doing is this is Crisis. This is Crisis on Infinite Earths. If you look through this Avengers storyline, the new Avengers storyline, this is essentially Crisis. You have your regular universe being endangered by other universes, and heroes have to make hard choices. They can't save everyone. And this is where Jonathan Hickman, and if you've read any of Hickman's stuff, and we've touted it, with Fantastic Four, with his run on the Ultimates, we've touted that he loves to build worlds. S.H.I.E.L.D., if he ever gets back to doing that book again, you know, Manhattan Project, he loves building worlds. He loves having the heroes be put into moral quagmires where there is no easy answers. And we've seen T'Challa in this, and God knows he's made some tough choices where he's had Doctor Strange and Reed Richards look at him like, are you nuts? And T'Challa's like, I've planned for this eventuality. And sure enough, he comes off sounding like Batman, like, we've prepped for this. We saw it coming. You guys need to get on Wakanda's page. Unfortunately, that's the thing white cinema doesn't like, a self-assured black hero who plans for stuff. And doesn't say, oh, Jesus, sweet Christmas.
Something? Now, is Hickman the one behind the whole deal with the Panther, him being the Panther of the Dead and having all these other powers from past?
Yep.
He really expanded the Panther to be a real, if his badassery quotient wasn't high enough, it's on a whole nother level that I don't know, it needs to be explored.
Hey, you could look at New Avengers being a continuation from his Fantastic Four run. You could look at it because he set all of these dominoes up. And if there's one thing that we appreciate on the show, and the Cap can attest to this, it's quality writing. Hickman didn't just go, I'm throwing this stuff out here. Let's see if this sticks. Hi, Bendis. I'm looking at you with Age of Ultron. Hi. He's got this plan. This is plan. He's like, okay, I got the first 10 books of this plan. Bap, bap, bap. And right now, you're making decisions that about what the planets live or die, what universes live or die. The burden on T'Challa's arms are a heavy one. And guys, if you haven't read it yet, go ahead and read it. Back
all right,
to you,
on that note, we're going to have to close the shop until next week, gentlemen. It's been real. Darryl, as always. Always a festive conversation. Captain, we got to go next door for the Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk show. Let's go on out with Spock with a beard, and we'll see you guys next week. Let's get to
enjoy.
It.
Enjoy.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
thing that black people need to tell the truth about.
What?
One, Rodney King should have got his head beat for driving drunk and being grown in a Hyundai. Two, O.J. did it. Rosa Parks ain't did nothing but sit her black tail down.
Hey, I'm going to back you up on that, because, see, look, he was on the bus back in the day, and he on the bus now.
Eddie, not only is what you're saying not true, it's wrong and disrespectful for you to discuss Rosa Parks in that way.
Exactly. Wait. Hold on here. Is this a barbershop? Is this a barbershop?
It's
a barbershop. Yeah, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation. That's all right.
You
got to
tear on the pop down.
Man, ain't nobody exempt in the barbershop. You know that. Ain't nobody exempt. You can talk about whoever and whatever, whenever you want to in the barbershop.
Why you got
to
tear on down like this, Eddie? You know you're wrong. Keep on walking. You're wrong. You're walking by yourself this time, pal. I ain't with you. I'll tell you one thing. You better never let Jesse Jackson hear you talking about that.
Man, just.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space to exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bert, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. This is D-Bert, your host, for yet another edition, batting second, The Grindhouse, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, if you dare, the water is warm, don't be scared, 646-915-9620, again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot to get into, folks. We always do. You know, we always try to stump ourselves thinking we can't have topics to talk about. It is impossible. How other programs go about talking about nothingness, shouting out Sergio Mims again, Mike Coy, Mike Jones, these gentlemen, and a whole host of other folks that have been with us on this journey. If it's not the captain and myself coming up with topics, our listenership helps us out. And I would implore our listeners to continue giving us information, sending us stuff that we can talk about, but I'm utterly amazed at the programming in urban radio where they talk about nonsense day in and day out. And even when we try to stump ourselves with not having enough topical information, we can't do it because we always come up with something. We always come up with something to talk about. All right, enough of that. Let's go to a quick groove. This is the White Mandingos. What a name. This is comprised of MERS, the underground hip-hop artist, White Mandingos. This is called Mandingo Rally. Giving you some Afropunk, folks. You know we're going to give you something different. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Black rights in space. I might catch the case. I'll be hiding in a spaceship. But as soon as the base hits, I'ma come and escape it.
back to the basics. Hip hop bass in a project basement. How you seen God if you never free bass kid? Meditation transcendental. My band is the band advanced instrumentals. Yoga, yogi, cigar stogie. Picture the crib and they tried to fold me. Tibet, Nepal, Masonic halls. Project hallway, Taj Mahal. Dichotomy, diatribe, comedy. Ain't shit funny about dying in poverty. Honestly, follow me. Greek stole astrology. Then they went crazy and crashed the economy. Fuck the Odyssey and economic policy. Economic sanctions, sanctions, sodomy.
I am cosmic. I am constant. I am conscious. I am tainted, toxic, and I love to talk shit.
It's fucked up, you depend on me. New Nike Airs and Nintendo Wii. Yeezy, Weezy, Jeezy, Breezy. Fuck me, I wanna kill my TV. Niggas in Paris, niggas of the day make a nigga embarrassed. Where is the science? Righteous rock, the rebellion, defiance. Flying on crack, baby. To make a difference, I ain't that crazy. Praise be to the G that raised me, cause all this bullshit today don't faze me. Whole rap ain't respectable. Your corn ain't a vegetable. What you did is regrettable, and just because you black don't make it acceptable. Incredible ignorance endangers the innocent. All for the Benjamins manipulating minds for the monetary benefit.
I am cosmic. I am constant. I am conscious. I am tainted, toxic, and I love to talk shit.
All blacks ain't brothers. Just cause we the same color. Still a punk motherfucker. Live like a man or die like a sucker. Never stutter, stand by your word. Respect the game or else get served. And you got some nerve. Just another nerd that was raised in the birds. Race traitor, call me a hater. Sell out your people for profit and paper. Ain't nothing sacred. Living in a state of supreme self-hatred. We doing it to ourselves. Without the white man's help. In and out of jail. How the fuck you raise a son inside of a cell? We doing it to ourselves. Without the white man's help. In and out of jail. How the fuck you raise a son inside of a cell? Get the fuck off your cell phone.
White Mandingos featuring MERS, and again, that's Mandingo Rally. Excuse the expletives, but I want to talk about that song in a moment, because if you heard the lyrics closely, one blurb was, just because you're black doesn't make you acceptable. Just because you're black doesn't make you acceptable. A lot of Afro-nerdism in that recording, expletives be damned. All right. For further clarification, I need my right-hand man, my partner in white-collar crime. Captain, you know what time it is. The great Morris Day talks about this. What time is it? It's Captain Kirk.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
The rapper in that song had some very strong lines. You know, a lot of cursing, pull out the cursing some, but he had some very strong lines that made a lot of sense. How do you raise a child when you're in a cell? Come on now. Come on now. You minstrels. Come on. He's talking to you. How are you going to raise him when you're in the cell? Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd. Good to be here. Let's go.
Oh, yes. Well, listen. Again, folks will say, well, he's being so much hypocritical. He's got the N-word in there. I'm not against music with a little bit of edge. Heck, I'm a Prince fan. So, you know, I got to have a little funk and a little bit of edge, a little bit of sex. We know the early underpinnings of black music, black American music, are rife with sexual innuendo. Innuendo. Not like the Rick Ross type of stuff, talk about putting mollies in women's drinks and raping them. That's not innuendo. That's being straight up. And it's not really being – I mean, you wouldn't really want to be coy about rape anyway. I mean, actually, he's being coy about being raped, Captain. But –
the early underpinnings of jazz, heck, I think even the term jazz has a sexual connotation to it. Blues is rife with sexual innuendo and passion, bawdiness, ribald anecdotes in blues music. It's rife with that. You go to a 1940s juke joint, people were grinding on top of each other, not unlike how they're grinding now. I can't say they were twerking. I doubt they were twerking. But it was somewhat bawdy music, but it was based on, what did he say? I'm not sure what he's saying. It was masterful innuendo. And I can handle some curse words. I can handle a little bit of edge. Just what are you saying? What are you saying? So I kind of like that record. I like what he was talking about. And just because you're black doesn't mean you're acceptable. It's pretty stiff. Pretty stiff. All right, folks. Again, Afro Nerd Radio, second half. For the Grindhouse, the call-in number, 646-915-9620. Captain, we've been meaning to talk about this for a minute. Actually, we spoke about this on the edges, you know, while we were in the gym, just kind of shooting it a little bit, chopping it up. I think initially we're really talking about the infamous Jones Beach, New York affair that occurred during the summer break. After school has been let out with the black colleges, having been a black college attendee, a black college graduate, Hampton University for the uninitiated, I will admit that I always had a great sense of pride in attending some of these college affairs before the lower tier arrived. I was there at the cusp. I might have done maybe 1 or 2 years of these things, and then I had to opt out. Because I knew there was such a thing as a lower tier, but we couldn't necessarily name it. I think we might have used terms like roughnecks back then. We might have used the term roughneck. I don't think term goon was actually out.
Roughneck was 90s.
Yeah, that might have been what we were saying.
Yeah.
I knew it was weird. I knew something didn't make any sense. I'm being somewhat cryptic. What is the Afro Nerd talking about? Well, as I said, Jones Beach, New York, you had this function where these black college kids would attend. And it was just fun. It was a way to connect with other like-minded college graduates or college attendees, college students. But I noticed that at some point I started seeing a certain element move in on this thing. And I didn't understand why, because why would someone who has no interest in education visit an event? Well, they had fine women there. I guess that answers my question. But you could see when they came in, the whole vibe changed. So you had the Jones Beach thing. Then a few weeks after that, Philadelphia had its own event. Well, that wasn't called the Freak Dick. What was that called? That was the Greek Fest, I think.
Yeah, it was Greek Fest.
They moved
it to Philly, yeah.
And that was, you know, people with their cars and everything, but it was still very much a black college kid or kids affair. It was a club. And as I conversed with the Oracle, when he had his own club, and when we were thinking about having our own club ourselves, he had said to me, and I didn't really want to hear it, but he even said, you know, there's some friends that you have that they may not be able to be in your club. A club is meant to be exclusive. The very nature of a club means that you are exclusive. Not everybody can be in your club, even people that you might have close friendships with. They have to meet a certain criteria. What has happened, and it's very, very much analogous to what's happening with black culture, is that we're letting the whole crew come in when they really shouldn't be in there.
Good point.
Because of tribalism. And you're doing your club and the premise of the club a disservice. So Complex Magazine, which I stay up on because they are very much into sneakerhead culture, and I consider myself a low-grade sneakerhead, they have an article. You may want to look this up, ladies and gentlemen, just for your own edification. Just simply Google Complex Magazine, History of Freaknik. And they do, and I read it, and it reminded me that I was not hallucinating. That there was a time when Freaknik was pretty innocent, pretty cool, and pretty exclusive. And it dates back to the early 80s, which is before my time. The early 80s in Atlanta, because that's the real Freaknik. There's been, you know, different iterations of a Freaknik atmosphere. Jones Beach, as I said, Jones Beach, then the Greek Fest in Philly, and then you have, later on, you have the Freaknik, which was in Georgia, in Atlanta. And it started out exclusively HBCUs. It even says, I know it wasn't hallucinating, in print it says that a certain element came in on this thing and ruined it. Now, you don't really even hear about these festivals anymore. I think it became so violent and so sexually lewd, Captain, that as expected, a good thing turned bad. And I remember when I saw hot women. Listen, the African is not above looking at beautiful women. But even the women were of a certain quality, Captain. They were in shape. I don't recollect seeing Caucasian hair hats. No Afro-Saxon toupees. They were in shape. They were refined. I'm sure they were wearing bikinis and everything, but you're at a beach. It was expected. It wasn't lewd. It was just people admiring each other and being happy and I guess tribal for on the educational tip, exclusively educational black higher learning tip. And then we allowed the roughnecks come in. We didn't try to really stop that, and it devolved. And this might have been a harbinger of what's to come. What are your thoughts on this? I know you knew about this thing. You were attended these things, and I think you noticed the same thing that I noticed. It just started to change. That lower tier became more. The lower tier phenomenon became more codified towards the early to mid 90s, where you just couldn't go to this thing anymore.
Well, what essentially started to happen? The crack epidemic was at its height in about 88. So they started to sprinkle in at these things around 87, but they were just sprinkled in. It wasn't really that bad if you attended. 88 got a little worse. 89 started seeing a little bit more of the element. By the time 93 came along, forget about it. The blunts being rolled, you know, with all the weed and everything, the street thug has totally arrived on the scene. They have their little money in their pocket, little $1,000 from what they were hustling, and they were right there on the beach in their little ciphers. That's what they called it, their little circle, you know, their circles they put together. And they were standing up all tough, saying, don't walk between here. I got this locked now, bringing jail mentality, jail and street. It's both because they're always in and out of jail. Jail and street mentality to a college setting. So, and you made reference to we didn't stop it because we didn't understand how to even begin to deal with anything like that at the given time. We just figured more or less they're black, I'm black, we're all hanging out, come in, do the same thing that we're doing. Also, too, these same individuals started to try to go to college parties. Adelphi University tried to get in. Hofstra University, they were trying to get in. Westbury, trying to get in. The same individuals. These same thugs trying to party at the college universities. But eventually, the colleges started to get that memo, so they cut it out. They started to tighten up security. They realized what was going on with that. So it was just, it's two different things. You're a street person. You're a thug dealer. Notice what I said there. You're a thug dealer. You stay in your element. You do your thing. But here's what happens with these individuals, these minstrels. They start making a little money. And what happens is money allows you to bridge gaps. That's what it allows you to do. You understand? It allows you to bridge gaps. But money, now this is messed up. For a lot of you liberal whites and you minstrels, what I'm about to say right now. Money cannot make you classy. You understand? It cannot. And you could dress it up, but a street person is still a street person. We've seen it many a time. We see it all the time on TV. Look at all these reality shows, you know? You just got to see. They show the lower-tier white person that has the money. They show the lower-tier black person that has the money. And I'm not talking about the person who comes from very humble beginnings that might have been raised in an impoverished situation and has brought themselves up. It's a mentality I'm talking about. That street thugism mentality. That's what I'm talking about. Money cannot, you know, money, you just can't get that out of you, you know, that mentality. You know, so it was just messed up. It was just totally messed up. It was a bad thing. It was just bad. You know, I experienced it, moved past it. I know how to identify it. I have a point of reference. And that's it. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Just because you're black doesn't mean you're acceptable. MERS, White Mandingos, Mandingo Rally. That's what we're talking about. Even in that song, it kind of explains it. I want to read a quick blurb and we're going to move along. But I just sometimes when you experience something, you might think you're hallucinating. But when you see it in print and the person is able to extrapolate exactly what happened, the devolution of a cultural standard, it really show how this is analogous to what has happened on a broader scale. Now, it says briefly, I'm kind of skipping around here, it says, although the name Freaknik now conjures images of scantily clad, curvaceous women, crowded streets, and Sodom and Gomorrah-style public fun, and in parentheses, and to some, lewd violence and animalistic behavior that denigrated and shamed Atlanta's black community, closed parentheses, it had humble beginnings. It all started in 1982 as a small picnic thrown by Spelman and Morris Brown students who needed a little hip midterm get down. Soon the picnic began to attract other students from nearby black colleges like Morehouse and College and Clark Atlanta. Where did the infamous name Freaknik come from? A 70s dance called The Bump, also known as Freaking. This is pre-Twitter, pre-Instagram. So now you can imagine, I mean, I don't even hear about Freaknik anymore. I think they pretty much got rid of it, Captain, because you can't have black folk en masse in some kind of gathering without there being hellish circumstances. It's a shame. All I can say, it's proof positive that it was not always this way. That lower tier BS came in, ruined it for everybody. That's it. Check out Complex.com, Complex Magazine, just to go through memory lane about this Freaknik thing. It wasn't always crude. It was actually something pretty cool. All right. Once again, this is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Grindhouse Edition. Before we go to a musical break, actually, I do want to, again, give kudos to Mr. Sergio Mims, our resident cinephile, and we're going to have him on, I would assume, next Wednesday to talk about what's happening in Shadow and Act. And we really do need Shadow and Act. I can't big up it any further. I mean, I know that Sergio, we jokingly talk about visiting BOSIP and visiting Media Takeout, but there's such a clear standard with what's going on at Shadow and Act, where they really showcase internationally what's going on in cinema from a black perspective. And it just goes to show you that, you know, there's been so much discourse. Matter of fact, just briefly, Captain, I was listening to Rob Redding, who is no longer on Sirius. God bless him. Hopefully he'll get his gig back there. Or maybe he might want to reconsider Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Anyway, he was talking about having seen the last or latest film by Tyler Perry, Temptation. And he, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, Tyler Perry, you know, he's maybe we shouldn't be making fun of him, but he couldn't give any real kudos to the film or kudos to Perry. But I think like what we have done, we've laid off of Mr. Perry because maybe he should be allowed to make that kind of cinema. We just have to start to open up or, if anything, highlight the other stuff that's going on so we can balance out the minstrel stuff. That's all. I'm not going to lambaste Mr. Perry and say and get into his business model. His business model speaks to, and Sergio talks about this all the time, speaks to these heavy-set
churchified, spook black women that espouse spookism, Captain. They're into mysticism and black spookism. That's what they like. You know, we're into, who's not going to like, from our perspective, Spike Lee? Spike Lee is bespectacled. He went to an HBCU. His father's a jazz musician. Brooklyn backdrop, Brooklyn brownstone. That's an Afro nerd kind of thing. Heck, I sat practically next to Mr. Starks, and a few seats down was Spike Lee at a Prince concert, first row. We're all there. We do the same kind of thing. Churchified black women specifically that espouse spookism are not going to get Spike Lee. And I have to wrap my head around that, Captain. They're not going to get him. So I applaud the goings-ons at Shadow and Act, because just a cursory look at the site, again, folks, Shadow and Act, courtesy of IndieWire.com. Go there after the broadcast, of course. I would say go there now, but go there after you listen to us and check out what's going on. There's a world of black cinema beyond Mr. Perry. That is what needs to be done. Anyway, talking about Shadow and Act, you know, we just have to highlight these type of films. It goes beyond Mr. Perry. We got to open up the field. So wouldn't you agree, Captain?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we talk about at ad nauseum on here. That's what it's all about. You know, having more lanes, more variety, and then if you want to go menstrual, that's all right. But you balance the menstrual stuff out with something else. Maybe sci-fi, maybe horror, a nice, you know, different kind of drama. You know, then it's okay. You see it for what it is. No, it's not a big deal at that given point. You mix it all up. You know, full course meal now. Not just the same thing. I'm feeding you all the time. That's
so. Quickly, before we go to this groove, Sergio sent me a clip of a very crucial thing that needs to be put out there. I tweeted it out. I put it on Facebook. We're going to talk about it in a few moments. I got an audio isolation on it about these young women. Well, actually, one woman specifically, an educator, who is teaching young black girls computer coding, black girls code. And actually, I was going to talk about another coding issue, computer coding issue. But this actually supersedes that. So I'm going to talk about that in a moment, shouting out Sergio for sending that to me. Why this isn't discussed, I mean, you know, I guess I can just, you know, lament on this. We're going to talk about it. It's a shame. We wonder why we are failing, because we don't talk about our wins. We don't talk about our successes. We stay, it's like the Rihanna and Chris Brown show 24/7, as if nobody else is doing anything else of importance. All right, enough of me being angry. We're going to go to a quick groove. We get back, we're going to talk about Black Girls Code, man. I thought it was highly insightful, major league necessary. All right. Some hip-hop, why not? DJ Jazzy Jeff, CL Smooth, legendary CL Smooth, All I Know. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Make it move like I wanna move with them horns. Let them play with them strings while I spit the life for kings. Put a cud in it, stud with it, we at it. Dudes that was meant to have it. Fans wanna reach out and grab it. I'm just an ordinary man with an unordinary lifestyle. Seen early I would live as a child. I was conceived a mistake, but through God it's really all it takes for me to be born and make the earth shake. This was raised from the bottom. So before them plain clothes got them, soak up the four square mouths to pop them. It's me in the flesh, here to put the rumors to rest and let you celebrate hip-hop's best. From the womb to the tomb, hit the game real soon with a tune that's gonna take sun straight to the moon. Ted Al, see it's my turn now. All competitors bow, all you're saying is wow.
All I know is the way it gotta go. Everything is
pedigree to own a whole catalog. All I'm saying is, don't sleep on me, dog. I really walk them streets there, school them young wolves. CL is slay anything in his way, okay? It's all about the aura I project, that ultimate connect, and how you see me as a man of respect, right? So it's like a mutual agreement, on your feet is in the cement. Learn the rules, let you earn your pay, sure. Nosy than you think of what it cost me, to how the world forced me to kill them softly, baby. How the music sound from the basement, and how the word bless me. Who let you see the fame don't impress me, dig it? Why it's cut from a different cloth, love to set it off. Keep a real nice piece in the loft, easy. Anytime you can hold your head, then you can hold some bread and relate to what CL said. Yes.
All I know is the way it gotta go, and everything it takes to hold me down. All I see is the way it gotta be, everything that seems to hit the town. This is my vibe, the way I survive, and people can't play me out of bounds. Here's my point.
Jeff on the turntable, Seal on the M-I-C, Philly on up to the N-Y-C, a breakdancer's guard, tags in the train yard, wild style fat lace, thugs locked up from a 1980s case, goons with them grown kids, used to them long bids, meet you on the dance floor slash the visit did, a lot for the rep to, and see it all make sense, if I'm the king, yeah, that should make you the fresh prince, send for the driver, you looking at the real soul survivor, like my man J Period mixtape, the man on fire, featuring the guest at Jeff Post. You marvel at the up close and personal meeting of the minds. You should read the signs. This is what reclines. The thoughts in my lazy boy fit like a hand in glove from the city of brotherly love.
All I know is the way it gotta go, and everything it takes to hold me down. All I see is the way it gotta be. Everything that seems to hit the town. This is my vibe, the way I survive.
All right, we're back. All I know, CL Smooth, the legendary DJ Jazzy Jeff. Yes, that Jazzy Jeff, Philly's own Jazzy Jeff, the call-in number, folks. You're listening to AfroNerd and Captain Kirk, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Again, kudos to Mr. Mims for emailing this to my attention. And it is necessary. I would implore our listenership, as I said, I believe at the last show, to send, well, may I said at the top of the show, I think, send in what you know. Send us what you got. I mean, I do my fair share of research. Sometimes I miss things. I was really proud and saddened at the same time that you have glimmers of hope, glimmers of genius. And I see glimmers of genius all the time by black folk, people of color. But we just can't seem to promote it or figure out a way to promote it the same way we promote minstrelsy. I mean, I don't think I'm talking out of the back of my head, Captain. I mean, we literally have a neo-minstrel standard, a neo-minstrel industry that makes a lot of money. So we figured out a way. We have figured out a way to capitalize, commodify, and corporatize black dysfunction for high dollar. But when you try to commodify black intelligence, why does that all of a sudden become somewhat difficult? That is the question that we have to start, because we can't continue to conduct ourselves this way, where the singular product that black folk are perceived to promote or are perceived to be promoting is black minstrelsy. So I applaud this black girls code because it is necessary. In the computer field, computer coding, computer programming field, it is a mostly male-dominated industry. So this young woman, her name, I got to try to get in contact with her, Kimberly Bryant, she's the founder of Black Girls Code. And she saw that there was something missing, and she set up these instructional courses specifically geared toward black girls to introduce them to coding at a very young age. Because computer programming is very much the 21st century. It's very lucrative, and we need to be there. We can't always be about bouncing basketballs and trying to get a record deal. There's more to life to that, and it's just not a good look. So without further ado, let me see if I can find this audio clip. As soon as Mr. Mims sent this to my attention, I was right on it. So I was able to isolate the audio on this wonderful program. This is Black Girls Code. Now, we have Black Girls Rock, which also is a cool thing, but this is Black Girls Code. A few moments. Let's get into it. We'll be right back.
On the surface, it's exactly what it says, which is Black Girls Code. They're learning how to code web pages and code programs for robots. So it's that in a literal sense. But figuratively, I think it's a way that we move forward into the future with how we do things, how we innovate, how we bring our essence back to dominant culture, because right now our narrative is kind of left out of the story. Just to say the word Black girl is revolutionary in and of itself. So for Kimberly to step out to open up that particular industry to girls at such a young age, I mean, the sky is the limit for what they can bring to society as a whole. So it's very innovative.
I founded Black Girls Code because I noticed there was a huge need. So what we're trying to do is plant tiny seeds, then feed it as we would grow in a garden, and really see where that leads us, not just as a community of African Americans, but as a nation for the future.
So far, we went to IBM. We made the robot that we had to program, but we had to debug it, and that was hard.
The robot really is a piece of equipment that humans program. So the question is, do you want to play a role in the future in terms of technology?
The lack of people of color in the technology field, a lot of it stems from education. We see an underrepresentation in that area from all minorities, ethnic backgrounds, and also people of color. And I think it's a tremendous program in how it reaches out to young girls and introduces them very early to the concept of through technology.
This is Silicon Valley. This is like the center of technology. So when the girls go to those organizations, to those companies, to do hands-on activities, that's how all education should be.
But just to see them flourish and grow in self-confidence and their sense of self, their identity, that's all part of the elements that we try to build into our program. We are the most underrepresented in the field of computer science. I'm African-American women, Latinas, and Native Americans.
It shapes their soul and their self-esteem and their self-worth by saying, look, this is what I did. You can see their little spirits changing and empowerment.
Black Girls Code can help little girls. If we have a Black Girls Code, when we grow up, we might become people in technology.
All right, folks, once again, that was Black Girls Code. Definitely go to blackgirlscode.com. And, you know, it really speaks to a larger issue because initially during this broadcast, I was actually going to talk about this really intensive web development course called App Academy. This is a new thing. I believe it started sometime in 2012. Again, it's called App Academy. You may want to check this out as well, folks. But App Academy is a 9-week course that is very intensive with coding, computer coding. And I thought it was pretty interesting in the sense that you have folks that come from different career paths, looking for career changes. There's a video courtesy of AOL News, I think, and they were talking about, like, all these folks that are coming from different areas. They weren't even about computers. It was one young cat, or relatively young guy, who was a graduate of Columbia Law School. And he was so disenchanted with pursuing law, he decided to take this 9-week course with App Academy, learning coding. And what makes it interesting is that App Academy works with the prospective student not paying tuition until they get you a job. Now, there's even been cases that we never really discussed. Well, it's hot because we've seen other schools that make these – many schools make these promises. They have all these statistics, Captain, that say – well, our students make X amount of dollars out of school, but some of them have been called on this because we've seen in this new economy that we have people that are quite learned, have multiple degrees and are not getting hired, okay? But the school has their money, or rather they are indebted to. These students have six-figure debt that they have to pay off when they're not able to get jobs with this education. So you have this gentleman that doesn't want to become an attorney, but the way this App Academy works is they are hard-pressed to get you a job. They pretty much promise to get you a job, $80,000 plus, because that's what coding jobs go for, and they will take 15% of your first year's salary as tuition. So they have an invested interest, a necessary interest, Captain, to make sure you get employed or else they don't get paid. But you don't pay them unless you get a job. And yet they are ensuring that they will get you a job. So I thought that was interesting within itself, and that is a coding course. Now, our own from the Inner Sanctum, Sally V, she is looking at this as well. She's in college now, and she looked at this with a Steve Austin eye, saying, wait a minute, I might want to do this just to put further insurances that I can get some kind of job, especially a high-paying one, because just having a computer science degree might not be enough. You have a school now that's pretty much saying, hey, we got to get paid, you have to get a job. It's a perfect symbiotic relationship. That's why I was going to talk about App Academy, but Black Girls Code dovetails off of this new world order. Black folks got to be about this. We're not discussing it, Captain. What's going on? What are your thoughts about this whole thing anyway? I think it's an excellent thing. We just have to spread the word.
Well, it's always a beautiful thing when Shadow and Act and Afro-Nerd Radio comes together. Do amazing things. And I think you're absolutely right. We just need to spread the word. More of this needs to get out, and then more of us, people of color, can get involved in this situation, get things moving. You know, it needs to be on a very big platform, and it needs to get out. And not only that, just be on the big platform, it needs to be driven home. Just as the menstrual things are driven home constantly, this needs to be something that's pounding in and out, in and out, in and out on a regular basis to build it up. This is a very good thing, you know?
I might be getting a case of OCD in a good way, Captain, because I am obsessed with this. It annoys me that there seems to be this love affair with minstrelsy on the part of some Black folk. And not just Black folk, really, you know, like I said, I have friends that are of other ethnicities that sometimes they like Tyler Perry. They like what was the other thing I mentioned? The Untouchables. You know, that's the French film that I referenced before. Sergio told us about Omar Sy, the French actor Omar Sy, that has garnered the role of Bishop for the new X-Men coming up. And I didn't really care for Untouchables because it came off as very much a minstrel show. It's again the cool Black guy teaching the stiff, stuck-up white guy how to be cool. So I mean, we've seen that for 40 years. So I didn't care for that, but I know quite a few folks that are non-Black that accept this form of entertainment as Black entertainment. Anytime it gets a little bit more complex, they get confused. I see our friend from Chi-Town is in the audience. Let me bring him in for briefly, and then we have more stuff to talk about. We got about 15 minutes remaining. Mr. Mims.
How you doing? Thank you so much for all the kind words about our website. We really always do appreciate that. In terms of the Black Girl Code, what happens is that, you know, we get a lot of emails and from filmmakers who have movies. We're being more selective now because there's a lot of garbage out there. And at one time, we had the habit of just putting anything up on the site. Now we think it over.
Yeah, good.
You know, is this worthy? And, of course, the editor gets most of those emails. But I will get, occasionally, I get some. And the director of this film, Shanice Johnson, sent me this email about her film and that it was selected at the Cannes Film Festival for the shorts program. And soon as I saw the trailer, I had to send it to everybody I knew, you know, including you. I sent it to everybody. I said, take a look at this. And, of course, I wrote about it today on Shadow and Act. And hopefully, well, that's the point. One of the main reasons why we created the site is to get short films. Because remember, this is a short film. It's about 15 minutes long. But still, for people to know about this film, that they can see it and have knowledge about it, they're aware of it, because I must tell you something. You won't see this in Ebony, not anymore. You know, you may see it in Essence. I don't know. That's debatable. But you're not going to see this a lot in the black media. The black media, particularly in the last few years, has become really, I guess the word is corrupted. And so I think that's the reason why I think Shadow and Act is even more important than ever right now, because we're talking about stuff that you don't see anywhere else.
Well, you know, Serge, I want to expand. I want to keep you on for a moment, because you just reminded me of something. I've been thinking about black media more and more, and you're right. What's happening now? I mean, we seem to be missing a lot of stories that could be blown up. And when it's like I look at things literally every day that are phenomenal stories that should be, if any place, highlighted in black media, maybe on a cover of a black media magazine. And I'm still seeing Rihanna on the cover, or you know, some minstrel. You know, what's going on?
What's going on is that they're desperate. They are desperate for readers, for viewers. They are desperate. The world has changed. Sites like Bossip and All-Star Hip Hop or whatever,
they get millions
of readers. Well, of course, because it's gossip. And what's happening is that websites, I'll give you a perfect example, like Ebony. I have to talk about Ebony. Since I don't work for them anymore, I'll give you a perfect example. The person who was really responsible for turning Ebony around was Terry Glover. And she came in about 5-6 years ago. She turned around the magazine. The website had no vision, substance, had no idea what it wanted to be. She turned that around. She brought me in. One of the great, great things about her is that she let me write about anything I wanted to write about. So I did movie views, but also I wrote about certain trends in black media or in film, and I did a lot of interviews. I did interviews with A-list people. I did interviews with opera singers. I did interviews with choreographers, with playwrights, incredible people. And when Terry left because of her illness, she passed away.
Passed on, right.
New Year's Day. When she passed away, but when she left in October because of her illness, they basically decided, well, fine, let's just get rid of everybody, and let's just go for. They brought in a whole new staff of people to run the website. They based it in New York for some reason, and now all they do is simply steal from other websites. They don't pay anybody anymore. No more writers.
Wow.
And, you know, they steal from, like I told you, we had a problem with Shadow and Act, where they were stealing so much of our stuff verbatim, that we actually had to call lawyers on them. And guess what? They don't take from us anymore.
Well, they shouldn't. They don't want to get sued.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's what the lawyers told them. You keep it up and see what happens. So, but if you look at it now, the website is terrible. It is terrible. It is awful. And I'm not saying it because I don't work there anymore. It is just bad. There are no new articles anymore. 90% of their content is from other websites that he still can take from or they're still getting away with. And they're paying a whole staff in New York to do nothing. When before you had a small staff of two or three people in New York, I mean in Chicago, and we were just writing stuff. But it was all about content. It was all about exploring what was out there. Nowadays, that's gone. All they know is that Bossip gets millions of viewers. Shadow and Act gets hundreds of thousands of viewers every month. And they want to copy that, but they don't want to pay anybody for that.
Wow. Because I tell you what I'm seeing. I was thinking about this today, actually. You heard about this thing with Gwyneth Paltrow being touted as the most beautiful woman. You know about this, Sergio?
Yeah, and that's because there was a deal with Paramount Pictures, who has Iron Man 3 coming out next week. Gee, isn't that a coincidence? The most beautiful woman in the world is coming out in one of the biggest films this summer next week. What a coincidence. More beautiful than Halle Berry, more beautiful than Kerry Washington, more beautiful than Sarah Martins. If you don't know who Sarah Martins is, check out that show on PBS, Death in Paradise.
Oh, yeah. That's my show. Yeah, the UK. Well, again. Yes, I love that show. It just finished the second season. I just saw it.
Right.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shows, set in a fictional Caribbean island.
Right.
One thing I want to – the reason why I mention her, not against her specifically, although Nas has given her, quote-unquote, nigga cred. She's allowed to use he gave her that ability. He didn't necessarily converse with the captain or myself or you. But anyway, I don't find her – the most beautiful woman in the world, first of all.
Because she isn't.
Right. But what I find it interesting is maybe black media is going to have to run, just throw out what we say is the most beautiful, not even black woman in the world. We got to stop that too. I was just thinking, why don't we have put Sally Richardson on the cover or, as you said, any black notable and say, this is the most beautiful woman in the world.
You know why they won't do that? You know why they won't do that?
Let me finish my point. Because we have a habit of quantifying or qualifying the descriptor black. And I'm saying, you know what? They will tell you, because I'm saying, wait, every time these mainstream publications find someone beautiful, it's rarely a woman of color. Okay, that's cool. It's just a coincidence, Sergio, allegedly. So why don't we
keep in mind. That now the single black publication did not put the Williams sisters on the cover until Elle magazine did it first.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So what's going on? This is what I'm talking about. Whether it's print media or even what's happening as far as television, I'm seeing a lack of information. I can find 101 stories for the week that are grave interest to black, to anyone, and yet I'm not seeing it reflective in black urban media. It's like we stay on Love and Hip Hop, all these quasi celebrity no talents, as if nothing else is being discussed or being done. Go ahead, Serge.
Now you have to understand, first of all, that black media has always been scared. And what I mean by that, and I'm not talking about lately, that you go through history. And what I mean by that, let's say in the last 20 years, they've been scared because a lot of the black media is heavily advertising driven. And they can't risk losing advertisers. If they lose advertisers, they're out of business. New York Times has lost something like 13% of their advertising, but it's still the New York Times. Black advertising, if a black magazine lost 13% of its advertisers, it's out of business. So that's what drives them, and it's always been like that. That's what drives them. Now, what's turning black media crazy is people like you or people like us, Channel and Act, or like the Griot, or other websites that are doing other things the traditional black media is not covering and doesn't want to cover, right? But the problem they're having is that as the readership gets more diverse and people find websites that attract their interest, the traditional black media, Johnson Publishing and other things, they're scrambling. They don't know what to do. So the only thing to do is to go for the lowest common denominator. Let's go for Mickey Minaj on the cover.
Yeah.
You know, let's go for Kevin Hart, because they can't afford to lose viewers and readers anymore. They can't put Sally Richardson on the cover, because they'll say, and I know this for a fact, they'll say, well, she's not a big enough name.
Wow.
You know, there's this kid. I don't know if I sent you the video. Oh, you know, about this young cellist prodigy in Alabama.
Yes,
amazing.
I do recognize
him. He's 11 years old, right? They will never cover him. They would have maybe 10 years ago. They won't cover him today. When Terry Glover was there, I would have written about this kid already. About this kid.
Well, listen, as I said before, there is a business model that should be explored, and we're doing it even as we speak, I guess, a business model of the other side of the black issue. I mean, there is a business model for it. I mean, everyone is chasing Rihanna, literally chasing this woman, as if she's the only topic to discuss. There's other phenomenal things going on besides that pot-smoking minstrel. Now,
see,
however
the other
attractive
problem,
she is.
You see, but here's the other problem they have. It's like gossip and media takeout and hip-hop, they're already doing her. They're late.
Yes.
They're late. Why would I go to Ebony to read about Rihanna when I read the same story 4 days ago in Bossip? What is the logic behind that?
I just think, logically speaking, Serge, we all can't ride the same train. That's the part that gets me. There has to be a place where because if you want to use the term white media does have a place to discuss these things that are going on in their communities. And we have our own version of it, and yet everyone wants to jump on this minstrel bandwagon.
You know, yesterday I was at a Barnes & Noble, and I was looking for a magazine. And Barnes & Noble, they have a huge magazine selection.
Oh yeah, I go there myself.
And I was there, and I was looking there, and I looked at all the magazines, and I said, you know, the magazines are still in business. Magazines are still around. People keep saying they're dying. They're still around. And I'm looking at all the magazines, and it's every single magazine on every single topic you can think of. You're interested in architecture. You're interested in politics. You're interested in liberal thought, you're interested in conservative thought. You're interested in music, there are magazines for rock, there's magazines for hip-hop, there are magazines for classical, there are magazines for jazz. There are car magazines, plane magazines, there's travel magazines, there's the whole world. And then what is that for black people? Well, it's the internet now.
That's it. Listen, Serge, we got about a minute, as always. I want you to come through on Wednesday to give us more on what's going on with Shadow and Act.
Yeah, sure.
Quick 10-minute rundown. As always, Serge, we appreciate it. Keep on sending me some stories, and I'll also promote it as well and promote Shadow and Act always. Appreciate it. Catherine, we got to get on out. We got about a minute. Any closing remarks?
It was very tantalizing, this show, this time around. That's the closing remark.
All right. Let's go to a classic. Screaming Jay Hawkins. I put a spell on you. I see you on Wednesday, sir. It's been real.
Yes, sir.
I put a spell on you. Stop the things you do.
I'm gonna put a spell on you.